Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of the Inside the Blue Jays podcast. I'm Ethan Diamandis. I'm here with Mitch Bannon. We're two very dehydrated reporters who write for SI.com, and we are happy to say that we're recording this episode from just south of Dunedin, Florida, where the Blue Jays are several games into their spring training season. On today's episode, we'll discuss the tantalizing Blue Jays debut of Yusei Kikuchi, some interesting new baseball tech being tried out in games, and we'll finish off with a chat about which players Mitch and I think stood out the most. Crack a cold one, go for a jog. It doesn't matter what you're doing, but we are happy to have you. This is episode 4 of the Inside the Blue Jays podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Right, Ethan, we made it down. There was several season delays, some flight difficulty, but we made it to the sunny Dunedin, Florida, or maybe a few minutes south of Dunedin, Florida. We've covered our first couple spring training games. We've gotten a little redder. We've gotten some sun, and we're having a good time. How are you feeling?
A lot better than I did during that nerve-wracking COVID test we had to do before we got here. I was feeling fine, but it's always a little bit of a worry. Still, anyways, and now, after what, 3 days we've been here covering baseball, I've got a wonderful bright red farmer's tan on my triceps that looks like someone drew it with a ruler. So you know, I'm leaning into the Florida vibe, and leaning into the Blue Jays vibe. Just a few days in.
Yeah, it's the Blue Jays vibe is pretty good. The Florida vibe doesn't match the Blue Jays vibe, at least so far. They've won a bunch of the games, even though the scores aren't meaningless. But I think the more important part is they've got some pretty key contributions from players they're counting on this year. Today, we saw the debut of Yusei Kikuchi, the lefty, and he kind of looked great. He looked like everything you would want him to look like. Obviously, there was some nerves he admitted to, and you saw that in the first at-bat of the game. He lost Anthony Rizzo after a battle. But then really after that, he kind of settled in. In the first inning, he was getting the ground outs, relying on the defense. And then in the second inning, he was just mowing down guys. I think it was 13 pitches, 3 strikeouts. What did you think of the debut today?
Yeah, I had my head down. I was doing some other reporting, milling about the ballpark, tanning my neck. But I watched the first inning pretty closely, and Kikuchi didn't look amazing, right? Like, he had that massive battle with Rizzo, who's always a tough fight. That guy will foul off tons and tons of pitches, and he stands right on the plate. He looked a little shaky, so you could see the nerves were there, and of course he admitted to that afterwards. So I didn't watch the second inning as closely, but in the first inning, it certainly looked like that old Kikuchi who, you know, might have struggled with command a little bit, and then, you know, when he made a mistake, guys would jump on him, but he didn't give up a hit today, right? No hits. But the second inning was that tale of two halves storyline that you've talked about, so I'll kick it to you on that. What did you see in the second inning that was so different and so very Kikuchi-like?
Yeah, I think it was him kind of just settling down. He expanded his pitch mix, kind of worked in the splitter that StatCast thinks is a changeup. So we don't really 100% know what he was throwing, but he got all four of his pitches going and he was just mowing guys down. Of course, it wasn't the greatest New York Yankees lineup in the world. In that second inning, he was not facing any guys we're probably going to be on the opening day roster, but 3 strikeouts and 13 pitches is still an accomplishment. And I think it was the location was key, the fastball location particularly. He was pulling the cutter in the first inning and he stopped doing that in the second inning. And I think he said after the game that we were asking him about his control and he said, hey, I know my control is going to be pretty key for me this year. So it's not like he's hiding anything. And he admitted to the keys he's going to need to nail this year to have kind of the resurgence towards that all-star form in the first half.
Yeah, for sure. And it's for Kikuchi especially, I think he's got a deep arsenal, but it's all the other stuff. Like, his fastball is pretty crisp. So I watched his bullpen today and the fastball is coming in with zip. It was coming in hot and I shot you a text and I said, fastball looks good. The command with the off speed was a little shaky. I said the changeup, the cutter was falling off a little bit, even the breaking balls. But you know, he took that first inning to settle in. And then after that, it was smooth sailing.
Yeah, and I think after that, it was kind of smooth sailing for the whole Blue Jays lineup. I don't know how much having a big run lead matters for a starter in a spring training game. They're probably working on their own stuff, but the Jays gave them three early runs. Every single player in that first inning had a hard hit ball until, I think, the bottom of the order. So I think everything just started going right against a pretty weak Yankees spring training team. But what else kind of stuck out from what you were watching in terms of the lineup or maybe any of the other guys that came in?
Yeah, the biggest thing was the long-awaited spring debut of George Springer, of course. And over the last year, we've grown accustomed to narratives about Springer missing for mysterious reasons or him, you know, getting in some extra work. And sometimes Charlie will say, oh, well, he ran the bases and he feels good. So the health was definitely the number one thing we were curious about. And a lot of people were asking Charlie, when are we going to see Springer? When are we going to see Springer? Well, we saw him today. And he delivered a first pitch single the other way. He looked good. He busted out a grounder. He beat out a grounder to first base on a chopper that he ran pretty hard. And then he flew headfirst into home plate. So he looked good. He looked good in the field too. He didn't really have too much action in center field, I don't think. And when we talked to him after, you know, people asked him about his health and if he's concerned at all. And he just said, hey, listen, I'm trying to play it smarter this year. And we pressed him a bit on that. And he said, you know, I got to know when to give it 100% and when not to give it 100%. And I think we saw last year, you know, when he returned in that game against Atlanta in Dunedin, he hit two home runs, but he could barely run the bases. Right. And, you know, with a high level competitor like that, he's been to the World Series. He's a high level competitor. He's going to push managers. He's going to push the people around him because he wants to play so badly. I think last year was probably a bit of a humbling experience for him. And this year, hopefully he'll be able to come in and have a broader view of the season and understand that they need him healthy, right?
Yeah, I think he is kind of a key. People always talk, especially people not kind of with the Jays or tracking the Jays day-to-day, how big of a loss Marcus Semien will be. And like, oh, even the Matt Chapman trade can't possibly replace the Marcus Semien production. But I think people who know what the Blue Jays did last year and know how many games George Springer missed can understand that that's where that production is going to come from. A healthy George Springer, 140 games of George Springer. And I think it is right to try to aim for that 140, 150 games. Toronto fans have done really well with load management before, and they might get another season of load management with a similarly ambitious team to that 2019 Raptors squad.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny you bring up Marcus Semien because George Springer unprompted brought up Semien in his post-game interview today. And he just said, hey, listen, like we miss Marcus. His absence is definitely felt in that lineup. But he said, you know, this team on paper has, you know, the same potential to be just as explosive as it was last year. He said the young guys have matured. And I think that was the biggest thing, right? We saw, you know, third year Vladdy and how incredible that was. We saw Bo again and Springer said he expects those guys to continue to mature, right? And not feel the loss of Semien, though, you know, you might feel it around the clubhouse. You might feel it like things like that. But once they get on the field, Springer said he expects, you know, those young guys to play like the veterans that they truly, you know, play like, you know, they don't play like young guys, right? So Springer had those expectations and, you know, he was excited to be out there for his first spring game and all good on his end, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we just kind of alluded to it. I think a guy who's going to be important is Matt Chapman for kind of that maturation process, being a clubhouse leader and obviously the in-lineup production.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned Chapman as a clubhouse leader, right? And when we first showed up on our day one, we watched Chapman take infield and he was playing alongside Jordan Groshans, who was starting at shortstop. And there was just a short moment where, as they were coming off the field, Groshans, who's a keen learner and he's an energetic personality, just being around him in the clubhouse and on the field, he had a few questions for Matt Chapman. You know, he asked about pre-pitch anticipation, you know, kind of the footwork and those first few short steps in the infield, you know, because Groshans recognized that he may end up playing third base one day like Chapman. And while he's here, my goodness, who else is there better to learn from? So that was certainly something that was talked about a lot when Chapman was acquired, how he'll help Bo at shortstop, you know, how he'll help the rest of the infield. But it was really nice to see that in person. What wasn't so nice to see in person, of course, was Chapman suffering a bit of an injury today. There was a throw to third on a steal, and there was kind of a nasty looking dust up. And it left Chapman with a bit of an injury. Mitch, you had a better angle on that than I did. What did you see?
Yeah, I looked up just in time to kind of catch that one. It looked like he got caught in the forearm. I thought it was the hand initially, but turns out it was the forearm. There was some blood. It sounds like it's just a cut or a laceration. He'll be day to day. Didn't need stitches, so it's probably not too bad at all. He walked off. He was laughing at Danny Jansen, who I'm sure felt bad trying to get the play there. I believe they got the out on the steal anyway. So even when they're getting hurt, they're making plays in spring training. But yeah, it sounds like he'll be fine. The injury or maybe even the bump that I'm a little more concerned about is Teoscar Hernandez. We found out today hurt his wrist on a fall in the outfield. Not 100% sure when that happened. It also sounds like he's day to day. So the team isn't too worried, but I would like to see Teoscar in a lineup before we really sign off on that one.
Yeah, it has very George Springer ran the bases today.
He's bad juju right there. Don't say that.
It has those that type of feeling. And yeah, we didn't see the Teo injury. Obviously, it must have happened when they were doing drills. If I'm not mistaken, well, he's certainly not. I don't think he's played since we've been here.
I believe he was in one lineup, or at least he's been taking batting practice.
Yeah, we've seen him swing, but Charlie described it as a left wrist sprain, a mild one, but still, anytime you hear about a guy spraining his wrist, you know, that raises some red flags. If Toronto's forced to start the season without Teo, that would be a big hole in the cleanup or the five spot, wherever he ends up hitting. Toronto does have some outfield depth, but certainly nobody like Teo to replace him in that lineup.
Yeah, exactly. I think we saw a Randall Grichuk grand slam today. He would be the natural lineup replacement, but then you kind of open up a hole somewhere else. I don't know. It would probably be the DH spot. We might talk about some guys later in this episode who could fill into that DH spot in various different capacities. But there was another interesting thing today. It was really an action-packed field game. They had a sick lineup out there against the Yankees. It was a Kikuchi debut. And then there was a new technological development that hit Toronto that I think you, as a former catcher, were particularly interested in.
Yeah, it's called PitchCom, and it's not PitchCon. It's PitchCom with an M, so it's not a Comic-Con style gathering where people dress up like their favorite pitchers. It's actually a remote control device that the catcher uses on his wrist. It has some buttons on it, and it's designed to signal to the pitcher you know, the pitch call without doing any signs, and it's supposed to happen instantaneously. So the pitcher in this instance will wear a headset under his hat, and then other players will also wear a headset. Now, it wasn't immediately clear if it's the entire team or it's just the infielders. And then basically once, you know, the catcher hits a button, let's say he hits a fastball button, through an encrypted radio channel, we'll hear a generic male voice in either English or Spanish tell the players what pitch is coming, so they can, you know, anticipate pitches the way they would. That first step, you know, if it's an off speed, you might lean one way, you know, the outfield might take a few steps over. So that's the important part of having it relayed to the infielders. The purpose of all of this, of course, is to stop sign stealing, because the catcher will never throw down any signs in this instance, and to improve the pace of play. Now, the Blue Jays tried it out, and we'll get to that in a minute. But Mitch, you had some doubts about how that might improve the pace of play or not do that at all.
Yeah, I think especially in the beginning, especially guys who will not grow up using this system, it's just really going to kind of throw off their timing and make them kind of second guess stuff. I think we've seen in the few games it's been used that there's been miscommunications. There's been longtime veterans who aren't quite used to this. And I think especially in a spring training setting where you're going out and trying to get your work in, you're trying to focus on very specific stuff, that you don't have to worry about this new technologies. And I think we could have seen that affect guys. I think Trevor Richards was the pitcher who used it today. But yeah, I'm not 100% sold on this. I'm like definitely not anti-technological developments in baseball. I think this is probably good for getting rid of sign stealing. If it's going to prevent guys from throwing down 1,000 different signs and doing a bunch of different, touching every body part on their body to change the sequencing of their calls, I think it's great to get through that. But I also think that it might need some tweaking, and we're not going to be seeing this in the big leagues this year, I don't
think. Yeah, oh, hell no. We won't be seeing it this year. It's interesting that they're trying to cut, like the league would propose something to try to cut down on sign stealing. Stealing signs has been part of baseball for as long as it's been around, I'm sure. And as a catcher, part of your job is to make sure that your signs aren't stolen. There'll be plenty of times where a guy will, you know, a catcher will throw down some signs, with a guy on second, whether it's, you know, a second sign or a variation of signs, probably something much more complicated at the big league level, of course. And the guy will grab his crotch or he'll grab his helmet. And that could be a sign that, or he'll flash his hand, right? It's just, and there's the old adage that if you aren't cheating, you aren't trying, right? That's what they say. And so, I guess that takes the little cat and mouse game out of it. If you replace it with an automated system, now, do you want sign stealing in the game? Probably not, but you know, it is part of the history. And I think it adds to the challenge as a catcher, but in the spirit of pace of play, I guess it makes sense, but you know, my gut tells me it's going to affect, you know, the pitcher catcher dynamic, the communication, and kind of some of the overall. It'll just make some differences.
I think I just want to toss this in as well. You talk about that cat and mouse game of cheating and trying to like get the better of your opponent. I think it's just could change the cheating. I think I mentioned to you, teams are just going to invest in like crazy hackers to get into each other's encrypted channels. Like that's the obvious next step. Teams are always, these are billion-dollar organizations. They have so much money. Obviously they're going to spend money to try to get the better of each other. And you're just going to create barriers that they're just going to try to knock down.
Yeah. I mean, now we have hackers in MLB hacking the generic male Spanish or English.
I want to hear the voice. I want to know what the voice sounds like.
Well, apparently the voice was played into the dugout. So today it was Trevor Richards in the sixth inning and Danny Jansen behind the plate who tried out the system. Now we talked to Charlie Montoyo after the game and we asked him about this and he said it threw Trevor's timing off a little bit. And I could totally see that as a pitcher, right? You have this cadence that you go through, like you'll see guys get the ball back from the catcher. They'll step off the mound, you know, they might lick their fingers. They might, you know, adjust their cap. They put their, you know, right or left foot on the rubber and they lean in for the signs. They see the signs, they come back to lean in and not look at signs. I feel like would just be an uncomfortable setting, right? You'll probably do it anyways, but come back and then you got an earpiece in. I just think it would be confusing. And as a catcher, or coming from a catching background, it really makes your game calling quite transparent. Before the pitch happens, right? Charlie was talking about it played in a speaker in the dugout and he was joking like, no, that's the wrong pitch. Don't throw it. I thought that was super funny. It's
like going back to Little League where the managers are just calling every pitch basically.
With that degree of transparency, I don't know. I'm torn on it. I like the way, you know, signs are relayed already. Now, I guess it would help with pitchers who have trouble seeing. We might not see any more catchers with painted nails anymore. But yeah, that was, it was quite the game. It was quite the game. And I asked Charlie after the game, you know, what do you, as a manager, what do you think about some of these technological advances in the game, especially this one? And Charlie said, you know what, we're open-minded. And this is him coming from the Tampa Bay Rays, who are a pretty, you know, open-minded organization themselves. And he said, if it's fair, and the players are comfortable with it, you know, he's got no problem using it, right?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because Charlie is very like an old school baseball guy. Even though he comes from the Tampa background, he's got like his injection of the analytics. He's open to all that. He is an old school baseball guy at heart. And to see a guy like that open to this is interesting. Like, obviously, we're outside observers. We don't know how they feel. And you talked to Reese McGuire when he came off the field very briefly, too. And he kind of said the same thing, like, yeah, we'll give it a shot. Like, mm-hmm. we'll see what it is. He didn't use it today, but they all seem open to at least seeing how it works, which is interesting for a game that has been so adverse to change for so long.
Yeah, it's all coming at once, right? We got like TrackMan, automatic strike zone waiting in the wings, larger bases, no shift, pitch clock. It's really going to revolutionize in the next few years. And the old heads will complain. I mean, people are already complaining about guys using cards for signs and all kinds of stuff like that. But I'm excited. It's interesting. It might break my heart a little bit, but I'm excited for the change. In the spirit of us talking about catchers, we talked about Reese. We talked about Danny Jansen. There's a third catcher in Toronto who's quite the guy, and he put on a pretty impressive spring display so far at the plate, and that's Alejandro Kirk. Now, the way Kirk's been hitting, and he's had a little bit of trouble staying healthy, but when he's in the lineup, he's a very helpful bat to have. But Charlie kind of surprised us when we first showed up with some of his comments about Kirk. Mitch, do you want to explain that?
Yeah, I think maybe it was our first day and people were asking about Kirk. I think it was his first game catching during spring, or maybe his second. And the question wasn't even really about his role. I think it was more about will he be regularly catching any one pitcher? Is he going to be kind of a personal catcher for someone like Alek Manoah? Because he caught the Cy Young Award winner, as Charlie Montoyo mentioned to us last year, and Robbie Ray, and this year again. And Charlie said something along the lines of, we'll see, he's fighting for a job. And obviously that's kind of a spring line people throw out. Everyone's fighting for a job. I'm sure Vlad would tell you he's fighting for a job, even though we know that's not true. But the way it was dropped really made it sound like Alejandro's spot on this 26-man roster is not certain. He's not penciled into the DH spot. He's not penciled into the backup catcher spot. We know they have a crazy amount of catchers, with Gabriel Moreno probably coming in the next few days too, adds another one to the mix. What do you think about that? Do you think Kirk is going to be on the 26 or 28 man roster, whatever it's going to end up being?
What I think is Charlie was listening to the folks over on Twitter, and he meant to say Alejandro Kirk was competing for a spot on the Cleveland Guardians, who have been scouting him lately. I don't know. Maybe, like you said, it's just a message that Charlie wants to send to his players. Like, hey, guys, play with some desperation. Play with a fire under your butt, right? Don't get complacent. Like, you can't just show up and make the team, which he probably can, Kirk. But the good news today, there were some reports through May 1st, right, the PA and the owners had agreed to expand MLB rosters to 28 guys. Now, we were speculating that Toronto could carry three catchers to begin the season anyways. That would definitely be pushing it. But with 28 guys, it almost seems like a guarantee that Toronto will carry three catchers. Now, will it be Reese? I'm a little bit higher on him as the third catcher, just because they've shown some hesitancy to send him down before. I know they waived him at the start of last season. Is it going to be Moreno? I doubt it with his short spring, right? He's delayed on some visa stuff. I don't know. What do you think? I got to say Kirk's spot is like nailed shut.
Yeah, I think Kirk will make the team. I think maybe the extra roster spot is more beneficial for a guy like Reese. Mm-hmm. So then you can kind of carry the lefty bat. You can give him one or two starts a week at catcher when you're DHing Kirk or something like that. But I also know this organization and Charlie love their pitchers, and they love using all the roster spots they can on their pitchers. I could see them just taking those two extra roster spots and be like, hey, Graham Spraker, hey, Hagen Danner. I think I got the name right. We always mispronounce that one. Here's a roster spot, run with it, or something like that. Maybe David Phelps becomes a shoe-in to make the team, even though we haven't seen him much. He'll need a 40-man spot, so that could help him too.
And it's sorry to cut you off. I just Ryan Brucki, right, is another guy who is out of minor league options. He was okay before his elbow injury last season, and then the wheels really came off, and he wasn't really a contributing factor down the stretch.
Well, he had really bad control in that one pitch in Tampa to Kiermaier at the end of the year.
Oh yeah, that was just a shaky accident, and it was all Joe West's fault, right? And now he can't hurt baseball anymore. Another significant, caveat to this 28-man roster thing is other guys have the chance this week on the roster with a potentially hot spring, right? And there haven't been too many guys who have jumped out at us since we got here, apart from the regulars and seeing them get their reps. But one player who's really kind of been hitting the crap out of the ball is Greg Bird, right? A player who came up with the Yankees, I would say 5 or 6 years ago. And he looked like a solid rookie. You know, his OPS was above 850. And he looked like he was going to be a hitter at the left side, especially at Yankee Stadium or in the AL East for a long time. And then he kind of disappeared. He went on sabbatical for a few years, meaning 4 to 5 years. And he had a good season last year with the Rockies AAA affiliate, was it? Yeah. And now he's here in Toronto, you know, with a spot, a potentially an opportunity to earn that Rowdy Tellez first base DH spot with an expanded roster. Mitch, what have you seen about Greg Bird that's really stood out to you and made you think, like, this guy might have a chance?
Aside from Charlie saying that he had good hands, which is the best compliment that former infielder Charlie Montoyo can give to somebody, it seems. Yeah, the bat has been there, and that's the big thing. The big thing, he's a left-handed hitter. It's, we can talk about it all day. Everyone can talk about if handedness really matters. I'm not 100% convinced, but the team wants another left-handed hitter. And they could go and get someone. Michael Conforto is still somehow out there. He'll probably find a home soon. But their biggest and best in-house option right now behind Kevin Biggio, and if you don't really consider Reese McGuire as like kind of that bench lefty bat, is Greg Bird. I think he has, I think, a 1500 OPS in 3 or 4 spring games so far. He's asked, he said, the skipper to play as much as possible. He wants this opportunity. He had a really good rookie season, as you mentioned, and then there's been injuries and the production has just not been there. He was on a couple hundred win Yankees teams, and I talked to him about that, and he's like, yeah, I played in the playoffs. I had playoff plate appearances. I want to get back. But he also kind of admitted that he didn't have a whole lot of options this offseason. Yeah, he had a good AAA season last year, but people kind of know what he is and aren't 100% willing to take a shot on him, even with the former upside. So he wasn't picking and choosing destinations, and he saw the spot, the lack of lefty hitters on Toronto. They offered him something, and he jumped at it from the sounds of it. And he's trying to play and earn a spot, and Charlie has admitted, hey, there's an open first base DH spot. Vlad's our first baseman, but they had Rowdy, as you mentioned, and Rowdy is kind of the comparison that I've even heard like team officials have thrown out. He's kind of the Rowdy Tellez type. He could be this guy, which I found super interesting that they admit that the organization likes this guy who can spell Vlad at first. It sounds like Lourdes is the backup first baseman right now, and they don't want to be doing that 40, 50 games a year, especially if Vlad suffers, has to go on the aisle at any point. So if I was to bet right now, I'd say 30, 40% chance we see opening day Greg Bird.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned Lourdes at first base, and we've seen Lourdes have his misadventures in left field, and putting him closer to the plate at first base doesn't seem like the smartest move. Now, no, he's been taking reps there, but Charlie Montoyo, I might add, he mentioned how well Greg Bird played defense. Now, you know, there's only so much he can contribute defensively at first base, but Charlie said, like you said, great hands. Charlie's ultimate compliment. And as a veteran first baseman, I'm sure there's some things he can still talk to Vlad about too. And when you take Vlad out of the lineup, you want a guy that is, you can trust at first base, at least. Another guy who could also benefit from this 28-man roster, and we've seen him multiple times. We saw him make his debut last season. He's a left-handed hitter, and that's Josh Palacios. He brings a little bit of a different skill set than some of the other outfielders, right? He's got a little bit more speed. I would trust him defensively. I mean, apart from that old misplay in Detroit that cost a pretty important game. He adds something that other guys don't, right? And you talked to Palacios. You had a nice interview and a story that's up on InsideTheBlueJays.com. He's coming off an injury, but he's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder, right?
Yeah, I think he really wants to get back to the big leagues this year. I think from what he said, if you don't know, his younger brother is a really good prospect in the Cleveland organization, and they've always kind of been going back and forth, climbing the minors and up, growing up. They're about a year and a half apart. And it sounds like his brother might be cracking the big leagues this year. And so Josh wants to be there too. And he knows they play Cleveland twice this year, and he wants to earn his spot there. And I'm sure he has enough motivation just trying to be a big leaguer himself, but maybe it's that extra motivation is what he needs. And we saw some flashes of really good games last year. I think it was his second ever game. He had 4 hits and a walk, which is, hey, if he does that, he's going to make the team for sure. But I think it is more of like, the tools he brings. He is what I view kind of as the stereotypical fourth or fifth outfielder. He's got the speed. He can play all three positions, maybe not elite, and he can get on base. He can take a walk and make contact. He's not going to be an 800 OPS guy. He's a borderline top 30 prospect in the organization, and he's a rare outfield prospect for the Blue Jays right now. So I think it gives him a path to the show.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you look at Toronto's top prospects list, and it's catcher, you know, infield. It's not the most diverse top list. And I think that's probably why Palacios is getting a little bit more leeway than maybe he would on a different team. Not to say that Josh isn't a good player, because we've seen him play and he's certainly very talented. But, you know, the reason we're having this discussion is because Toronto is quite shallow beyond, you know, Randall Grichuk, the bench guys beyond them. Toronto's very shallow at outfield. And that's why they're still checking the market. And avert your eyes, longtime Blue Jays fans, because they're checking on Brett Gardner. Can you believe that?
I honestly can't believe that. I know we saw that report today. I think I mentioned to you the first thing I thought of was, hey, this has got to be a Brett Gardner camp leak, just trying to push the Yankees over the edge, making that one-year offer we all know they're going to make for Gardner at the end of the year. I think I've heard they even have his locker waiting for him at spring training. It seems like a song and dance that the Blue Jays are kind of getting caught in the middle on. But hey, maybe we won't see Greg Bird on opening day and we will see Brett Gardner. I'll be pretty surprised.
What's the quote? You either die a hero in New York or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. The locker thing is funny, because we walked into the Jays clubhouse today and we saw two empty lockers. And we made this joke even before the reports came out about Brett Gardner being, or Toronto being interested in Brett Gardner. We're like, there's the Gardner lockers, you know, making a reference to the fact that the Yankees had one open for him. And God, we might have predicted the future.
Yeah, we're Nostradamus over here with our Blue Jays rumors.
So Gardner rumors aside, we did want to dedicate a good amount of time to our standouts, guys that Mitch and I have kind of seen either at the complex or, you know, in limited spring appearances that have really, really stood out to us. Guys kind of off the radar, right? We'll talk about Vlad. We could talk about Vlad every podcast if we really wanted to. We talked about Springer, but another tantalizing guy, Mitch, who pitched yesterday, and he showed off his good stuff again, as he always does, you know, near the start of the season. Nate Pearson, he was excellent. The fastball got to 99. He broke out a nasty curve. Was it to Miguel Cabrera?
Yeah, he dropped it in there, curveball looking. I think he dropped it to someone else as well. It was nasty. I would like to put a caveat on 99. I believe Nate said some guys were ribbing him in the clubhouse and the dugout after he got out, saying, oh, only 99 today. Because we know he can hit 100. So it's spring training for Nate. He's got a couple more miles per hour there. But I think only 99 is so very telling about what they think they have in this guy. Like, we got both the big guys yesterday, Manoa and Pearson. Pearson didn't look great at the very beginning, kind of like a Kikuchi start. He struggled the first batter. He walked either the first or the second guy, and then he settled down, two hitless innings with four strikeouts, the same line as Kikuchi. Man, if we can get that, if they can get four innings, five innings out of Pearson, I think the Blue Jays will be thrilled.
Yeah, it's just not so simple with him, right? I mean, in a different roster construction, it would be. And I think Nate would benefit from that too. And I think the team would benefit from that too. Just the problem is they have five established starters, right? I mean, not Alec Manoa, but he showed that he belongs in that rotation, certainly before Pearson does. He's got the stuff. It's just, you have this massive weapon and you just don't know where to point it. You don't know how to use it, because he's struggled as a starter. And, you know, he's shown that he can be a dominant bullpen pitcher, but you don't want to limit him to that in spring, for sure, right? So Charlie even dropped the other day that there's a possibility he starts the season in AAA, right? And then you go and you watch a start like the one yesterday, and you're like, this guy cannot be in AAA. He can help the team now, but it's a lot of confusion. And I wasn't at the Pearson presser, but you were. Did he talk about how he maybe handled that confusion around his role?
Yeah, I think he kind of gave off kind of conflicting vibes, I would say. He said the right things. He said, hey, I'm going to do whatever role they want me to. But he also said, not to mince words, he basically said, I'm a starting pitcher. Like, I know I have starter stuff was, I think, the word he used. He said, relievers have two pitches. I have four. Like, that's the way he put it. He believes in all four of his weapons. And when you're throwing a 99-mile-an-hour fastball, 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and you can drop in the slider and the curveball, I don't care what your third pitch is. That's enough to be a starter. And I think the interesting thing with this year is the innings buildup, is the expanded rosters. Kikuchi and Ryu are both guys who maybe they think about giving an extra day of rest. And we saw Ross Stripling today, and he looked good. But Nate Pearson's another guy who can give you the innings on those rest days. He can be a spot starter. I don't know if the spot starter comes in calling him up from Buffalo to make those starts, or if it comes in trying to keep him stretched out on the roster and slide him into those opener roles every so often.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we can eliminate either the chance that the Jays use a six-man rotation. Now, I feel like if I was a top-end starter, like if I was Berríos, if I was Gausman, I wouldn't love that idea. I'd like my rest. You think of like
Robbie Ray
last year. I was about to say Robbie Ray would have went and punched a locker. I don't know, because you don't want it to leak into your other pitchers, right? So maybe, you know, given Ryu, you know, getting later into his career, you know, they might maybe spot start or do, if there's an off day, they might use that to their advantage. But yeah, you got to use Nate Pearson. I don't like the idea of him starting in AAA. You know, I think my gut tells me what we're going to see is he starts in the bullpen, but he starts in a Stripling type role where, you know, if he gets work, we're planning for him to go two innings. We're planning for him to go three innings. Or, you know, if Toronto has a bullpen day, you know, they start with him and they go four or five. I don't think he would love starting the season in Buffalo again. I think he's had enough of that. But yeah, he could be someone that comes up, I guess, from Buffalo. I don't think he's someone that'll be impacted by the five minor league options. I mean, that if they're sending a guy up and down that much, I doubt it would be Pearson. But yeah, I mean, he's got all this stuff. This is, you know, we've had this discussion with Pearson before, right? Almost each spring training, last spring training, you know, he's a hyped up guy. The one before, you know, he was working on getting healthy, but now everything's on his side, you know, apart from the roster makeup. And I imagine that must be frustrating for him.
Yeah. I think it is interesting, because like on most teams, on last year's teams, they would have been able to find or pencil in, hey, we don't have the strongest rotation. One of these guys is only going to go two or three. So then we can keep Pearson and Stripling stretched out by them just pitching four that day. But you look at the Blue Jays rotation. Is there a guy who you think is going to get knocked out in the second more than like once or twice a year? Yeah. I don't think they can bank on that to keep them stretched out. So as much as I hate to say it, it might be the best to keep Stripling as the major league long man and let Nate go build up innings in AAA.
Yeah. And, you know, you might be onto something, because we've seen the starters. I mean, the starters work to a certain pitch count, right? Charlie comes in and he says 40 pitches for Kikuchi, 40 pitches for Manoah. Whoever's on the mound, you got 40 pitches. Now, Stripling entered the game in the third inning today, and he threw for three full innings. Right.
Yeah. And I think it was the longest anyone's done.
Yeah. And that's not for nothing, especially coming out of the bullpen. But I had the pleasure of burning my neck and sitting near the bullpen, peeking my head down and taking a look at guys. And Stripling was up, I'm trying to remember, probably after Kikuchi was just finishing his first inning, maybe even earlier. So Stripling went through a full starter's progression. He started with some shorter toss, his armbands. I mean, everyone does armbands, but Stripling was going through almost a starter's progression. Now, you can't do long toss under the bullpen, of course, but he can start, right? I'm sure if you ask him, he'll want to start too, but he understands how this roster is constructed. And, you know, if need be, he's going to be the guy to go long. And yeah, if there's any reason, unfortunately, that Nate Pearson has to go to AAA, it will probably be because of Ross Stripling.
Yeah. And I think we may have talked about every single pitcher on the roster at this point. And I know there's been a hitter that has stuck out to kind of both of us. And we were watching him at BP today. Who's the younger guy people should be looking out for?
Yeah, my goodness. And you know, there's the problem with minor league camp and spring training in general is everyone is wearing different numbers, or there'll be a ton of prospects And, you know, it's hard to recognize guys if they're wearing hat or helmet, and, you know, there's so many guys mulling about. But when the ball comes off the bat, the way it did with Leo Jimenez, who's Toronto's fifth best prospect, that'll turn your head, right? And we were at, we were in Lakeland, Florida at the Tiger Stadium. And we just started seeing this guy ripping the ball to left field. Just like it was jumping off his bat. And he wasn't a particularly tall guy. I think Jimenez is probably only 5'10", but he's in great shape. He's got very, very broad shoulders. He's built like not too many other guys on this roster. And he was crushing the ball. And the story gets even funnier in that he hit one home run in high A ball last year.
Yet they say don't scout the stat line, and we were very much not scouting.
We're like, okay, we're gonna search this guy up because he's putting balls off the batter's eye, and we're like, okay, we got to take a look at this guy. If you go through his stats, it's ridiculous. So in 54 games in high A ball last year, he hit .316, pretty good,
very good, yeah.
He slugged .381, you know, that pedestrian, right? Yeah. And at high A ball, you want that higher. Here's where it gets interesting. His on-base percentage was .517, over 50% of the time. This is not Barry Bonds. He's not getting intentionally walked, but he's getting hit by so many pitches. So Jimenez was hit by 21 pitches in 54 games, which is ridiculous. It's also a product of maybe pitchers in high A not having such amazing control. Not having such amazing control. But that's, you know, it's not just the way he reaches there that contributes to OBP. He walked 51 times and he only struck out 35 times. That kind of plate discipline, regardless of if it's in rookie ball, high A, low A, it stands out.
Yeah, that's like Vlad-esque. I remember everyone was looking at the Vlad stat lines when he was in double A, triple A, and I feel like a big scout thing is, oh, he walks more than he strikes out. And Jimenez walks way more than he strikes out. We'll see how that carries. Like, people are going to start attacking you if you don't show power when you get into the upper minors. And so we'll see if the BP power kind of transitions over and negates that. I think this could be a very interesting year just off a few viewing experiences for Jimenez. But I think you look at Otto Lopez as kind of maybe the floor for what he is right now, a high OBP kind of middle infield utility guy. If he develops the power, maybe he steps a little closer to an Orelvis Martinez.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Orelvis is another guy who's, you know, when he gets up to the plate, you could be facing the stands and just by the sound of the ball off the bat, you know that there's a big time hitter at the plate, right? I mean, we don't know too much about Jimenez's defense. I don't think we really check that out too much. He's a middle infielder, probably one of those guys who's going to end up settling. You know, he's probably trying to play shortstop. I imagine he may end up at second base. Not too many guys can start as a shortstop and stay there the whole time. Yeah, but he's certainly someone that stood out to us. I don't know where they'll start him. It's really hard to say. I mean, Otto Lopez was in AAA last year. I think he started in AA, though.
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah. I think he was really good in double A, got a brief taste of triple A.
Then got called up just because Toronto was
even briefer taste.
He got to pinch hit. Yeah. Jimenez, I would imagine he would start at double A. I mean, that might not happen. Maybe they want some more seasoning at high A, but him and Orelvis, I think, roamed the infield together last year.
Yeah. And I think Geraldo was there too. Like that, they got so many infielders, and they've had infielders forever. They trade the Matt Chapman trade. They didn't really move any of these infielders, so they still have them all. I think we're kind of, if there's another big trade, I would bet they start drawing from that
glut. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other discussion, and there's plenty of fun to be had.
A whole podcast on the next trade discussion.
I mean, from Jordan Groshans to, if you want to move someone like Jimenez or Geraldo, there's plenty of guys, but I think we'll save that for another day. You know, right now we're focused on getting up and getting to the PDC. Mitch and I are up at about 6 a.m. and it's what, a 40-minute drive to the PDC.
Depends on the traffic.
Depends who's driving. I tend to have a bit of a heavier foot than Mitch. yeah, so we get there, we get to the PDC, we're around the team, and it's been a great experience for us so far. And I think, you know, as much as we are finding this to be an enriching experience, I think the fans are finding this spring training to be just as exciting. 451,000 people viewed Toronto's spring home opener at TD Ballpark against the Pirates. And that was, you know, I think only the F1 opening race had more viewers than that, which is incredible for an exhibition spring training game. Now, it was the first televised game. That's an important note. But if we thought Toronto had its fans hyped up around the Blue Jays last year, I would say it's even stronger this year.
Yeah, I think it's, what is it? What month is it? March? I think everyone already has Blue Jays fever, and you can see it in the people who travel down. You hear it in the crowd. I think at Lakeland, there was people cheering for the Blue Jays, and they're traveling around and cheering for this team. And I think it's only going to grow bigger and bigger when they get up north to Toronto.
Mm-hmm. And we will be there to cover all of it for you guys. We appreciate everyone listening. And we'll be sure to probably do one more podcast, I think, before we head on home. So those have been some of the notes we've picked up from spring training this year. We'll be back sooner rather than later. And in the meantime, enjoy some Blue Jays spring training baseball.